This is just a test. Just wondering if it's going to work. Just wondering if it's going to work. Now, in the work,
there are a couple of people in my office. There's one more person, so I had to excuse her to come here. So this place, this cubicle, is for a service personnel, an intern who has already left, and so I decided to come here to have the peace and quiet.
Nice.
Yeah,
that's really nice. I think that'll really help with the recording, you know, so there's not background music or sounds or whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to start the, I'm recording the Zoom call, and then I'm also going to do a separate recording just in case something happens. Okay. So I'm just going to start that up. And I'm kind of curious what you thought about the questions that I sent you.
I thought they were quite cool. They weren't difficult questions, and so I can manage them just fine.
Yeah, they'll be easy. I mean, this is just going to be for fun now. And I want to thank you so much for putting me in touch with your friend.
Don't mention it.
Really thoughtful of you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
I was thinking, well, I guess I can't get anyone from out of the country because all my contacts are LDS contacts.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is good. And so I did text her, and we'll see. I haven't returned, you know, whenever she responds back. So.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So she is sort of like a childhood friend in the secondary school. I met her in the secondary school, and we've remained friends since, ever since.
That's a long time.
Yeah, that's a long time. That was like way back in 2001 till date. And so she's a good friend. I'm sure she'll be able to help with your questions.
That'll be really fun. I'll look forward to meeting her now that I know you. It'll be fun. And, you know, you'll have to record a little bit in here about her, because then I'll, you know, we'll know about her as we have this other history. But anyway, is there anything else that you'd like to say before we kind of formally get started?
No.
Any requests or no?
No.
Okay. Well, I'm going to just go ahead and start then. I'm Diane Livingston, and I'm here with Mahana Kadso, and she lives in Ghana presently. Today is October 21st, 2020, and I have met her through a friend of a friend. So I'm just delighted to meet with you, Mahana, and to hear about your life story, and hope that this process can be a blessing to you and your family. That's my intent, and I'm guessing that's probably your intent as well.
Yes, this is actually the first time I'm ever having something like this done, and so I'm sure it's going to be a blessing to me and my family, and so I look forward to whatever that would transpire. I look forward to the experiences I'm going to gain from this.
Wonderful. And, you know, really, where do you start? You kind of start at the beginning of, you know, where you were born and where you grew up. Would you like to share a little bit about that?
Okay. So I was born in Accra, Ghana, at a place called Mamobi. Okay, so Mamobi, I wasn't born in Mamobi, I was born in Kotobabi. Then we lived in Kotobabi for a long while until about when I was, let's say, 11, 12 years. And then we moved to where I am currently, which is Mamobi. But when I was born at Kotobabi, I had an elder sister who was born before me. And so we lived there. I lived there with my mom, my dad, and then my elder sister. She's called Lalet Jifa Kujo. And so that is where that's where I was born. Okay. So I was born at Kotobabi in Accra. It's a suburb of Accra. It's a small town in Accra. And the people there, we have a lot of ethnic diversity of the people there. We have Gans, and they speak the Gan dialect. We had Ewes, and they spoke Ewe. We had Ashanti or Chi, as we would call it. And so it was a diverse group of people with different ethnic backgrounds. But we lived together as friends. And so that is it.
And so tell me about your siblings. Do you just have the one sister?
Yes. So I have one sister. After I grew up, I got to know that I had one other sister. What's her name? Well, I can't remember her name, but that was what I was told, that I had one other sister apart from my elder sister. But for the one I know that I have been living with, is just one. So we are just two. We are just two siblings, two girls. My elder sister, she's called Lalet Jifa Kujo. And then she was born on 1st July 1983.
And maybe you should share your birthday.
Okay. And then I was born on 10th of October 1985. I remember my stepsister's name. So she's called Enyonam, but that's all the name I know about her.
And is she your mother's child or your father's child?
She's my father's child. She's my father's first child.
And, okay, wonderful.
Yes.
That's good.
But that's all I know. Yes, but that's all I know about her. She's called Enyonam, and she used to live with my grandmother, my father's mother, when those days we used to meet her. But it's been a long while since I saw her. It's been over 10 years since I last saw her or spoke to her.
Okay. And so I'm really interested about memories that you have as a child. What types of things did you like to do as a child? Did you play with your sister? Did you have hobbies, interests?
Okay, so that's interesting. So growing up, at a point in time, my sister had to go and live with a different family because my dad had to travel to Denmark to continue his studies. And so things were a little tough for my mom. And so she had to go and live with, he was a bishop then. It's called Sono Korie. And so my sister had to go and live with them. And then she continued her schooling there. And I was the only one with my mom. But before she left, we would play together. You know, in the evenings, after we finished eating and doing all our household chores, the children in the neighborhood, especially in the house, it was a big compound house. We had about 10 or 12 rooms in the house, and there were different families living in there. And so in the evenings, after we've helped our parents and people to cook, we all gather ourselves outside in the night, like with the moon, and then we play, we sing songs, we clap, we play, we do hide and seek. And so it was very interesting growing up. For me, I liked playing football. And so if you don't see me amongst the friends or the children in the house, especially around 3, 4 p.m. thereabouts, I'm with the boys playing football. Yes. And so that is what I liked doing. Then at a point in time, I realized that I liked musical instruments as well. And so I joined a group that learned how to blow the flute. So in Ghana, we have a local flute. We call it Atatembeng. It is made out of bamboo. And so I learned how to play it. And then once a week, we would go to our national theater to play. It's called Indigenous Africa. We had the opportunity to travel around the world to play. Yes, to play it to people. And so if I am not playing football and I'm not playing with the neighborhood girls, you know, running around, singing and clapping, I might be at the National Theater practicing or rehearsing. And then When my dad returned from Denmark, he brought along a small keyboard, and then he was really interested in making us learn how to play. So my sister started learning how to play, but she didn't really take it far. Then at a point in time, I took it up. And so I learned how to play the keyboard. He got a teacher for me who taught me how to play. And so I started playing at church. I started playing hymns at church. And till now, I still enjoy playing it from time to time. And so as a child, those were the things I liked to do. Sometimes we could also play Owari. It's a local, I think it's made up of six. It's a small, it's a wooden case. It opens and then it closes. And then when it opens, it's about 12 holes. And then we use things like pebbles, and I think four in each hole. And so we sometimes play that also. It's called Owari. And then there's what we also call the Ludo. So the Ludo is we have a dice or a cube that has numbers on each of the sides. And so, and then we had colors, different colors to differentiate. So four people can play at a time, the Ludo. And then we had different colors to differentiate each of the players. And so when you throw the dice, whatever figure you get will determine whether you start or not. And so at other times we play Ludo, at other times we play the Owari. The Owari, two people play at a time. And so that was it. That was what I liked to do. And then I also liked climbing trees. Wherever there's a tree, you see me on top of that tree. And so and so that is something I loved to do, climbing trees. I liked adventure. And then in the secondary school, I enjoyed sports as well. So I ran for my school in the secondary school, and then I was also in the cadet club also. And so I had always wanted to be a military personnel, a military officer from growing up. And so anywhere I see military or things that had to do with military, scouts, girl guides, and all that, I was always interested to be part. And so in the secondary school, I had an opportunity to be part of the cadet group, the cadet corps. And then after secondary school to the university, okay, yes, when I got to the university, I was still in the cadets. I joined the cadet corps. And then I was the commander in chief for my hall. So I was in the Adeshi Hall. It was a mainly female hall. And so I was one of the cadet commanders there. And then I had the opportunity to do an exchange program with the Duke of Edinburgh. So the Duke of Edinburgh also had something they call the Head of State Award Scheme or something. And so we had an exchange program where they came down, and then we went to most of our villages in Ghana here to render services to them. We built schools, we did paintings, and then we taught some children how to read and write. And so that is something I really enjoyed doing growing up until I completed, and then I started raising a family.
So is the cadet, is that a volunteer or is that a job?
It's not a job, it's a volunteer something. It's like a club, it's like a matured form of scouting. Yes, it's
Okay,
like a matured
wonderful.
form of scouting. Yeah.
You had a very rich childhood.
Yeah, I did. I
Lot of interests there.
did, yeah.
I'm kind of curious when it Can you remember the age that you started playing the flute?
Okay, so that must have been JHS 2, junior high, secondary school, in my second year. So maybe like 12, 13.
Okay. And how about the
Yeah.
piano? How old were you when you started playing the piano?
Around about the same time, just
Okay.
around the same time, yes. About 12, 13, 14, thereabouts. Yes.
And what was school like? Did you enjoy school?
School, skill. Okay. So, My basic education was sort of a challenge for me. Growing up, I am now realizing that it looks like I didn't really know what I was about growing up until at least I completed secondary school. That was when I started realizing that, okay, so this is me. This is what I need to do. But when I was in the basic school, I was sort of struggling. I had it very tough learning and all that. My parents did all they can. They hired extracurricular teachers for me to help me. But I guess, I don't know. I don't know what the problem was, but I struggled a little bit with school. Although I was going to school all right, I wasn't doing too well, like my parents would have wanted me to. And so that was a challenging time for me, not knowing why I wasn't doing so well in school. It was a big challenge. But after secondary school and then I got into the university, I told myself that if people who didn't have the opportunity I have had have been able to go through all that they've been able to go to excel, then I should be able to do that and much more. And so I took it upon myself to sit up, to read, and I took it as a challenge of myself to master whatever it was I needed to. So in the university, I started with English, I started with philosophy, I started with, okay, so it was classics and philosophy, English, and then French. But I was always having issues with my English. I was doing very well in my French and in my classics and philosophy. And so in the final year, when I had to major, decide on what was going to be my major, I would have wished to have done an English and French major. But the English was giving me issues. And so I was like, okay, let me just go ahead and use philosophy and then French. And then even with the French, it was a challenge. But I said to myself, I've had the opportunity to learn the French from my early stages. And so I didn't like French in my basic school. I didn't like French. My father made sure that I learned the French because to him, he felt that it was an advantage I was going to have in the near future. So he did everything in his power to make sure that I got the foundation in French. So during vacations, I would go to Togo. So Togo is also an African country. It shares a border with Ghana, but he had friends there. And so during vacations, he would ship me off to Togo to go and live with some family friends so that I could have hands-on experience with the language. And so that went on for some time until I was ready to go to the secondary school. And then when I got to the secondary school, I continued with the French. Then every vacation in the secondary school, I would go there and go and stay there. And so it gave me some sort of exposure with the language. I was able to speak not as good as I should, but I was able to get some sort of experience with it. And then I continued at the university. And so that gave me an advantage over the others who didn't have the opportunity to do that. And so that was where I got the confirmation or the encouragement that I've been able to get a lot of resources to help me improve upon my French. And so if I'm not able to do that at university, then I don't know what else I can do. And so I strived to do the French. And then I came up, I did well. I was able to write my project in French. To my amazement, I never knew I was going to be able to do that. But I ended up doing I majored in French and philosophy, but I did my project work in French. And so, yes. And so although I struggled, it was at a latter time that I decided to tell myself that I can do it no matter what happens. If others have been able to do it, I can also do it. And so I think it's just a reaffirmation that we need to give to ourselves that no matter what happens, once we have told ourselves that we can do something, we can really do it. And so that is it.
I love this. It seems to be a recurring theme of your kind of coming to yourself and deciding upon something you're going to do and then sticking with it. And that seems like something that can really be something that you can pass on to your children as a good quality trait. Very admirable. So we've talked about education. Tell us about your religious affiliation and how your life has been there. And we've already talked about, you know, how I initially had hoped to do a different kind of research project where we would talk about COVID in relation to religion, but that has not worked out. But we can still talk about, and I'm curious about, you know, I understand that you belong to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Is that something new for you? Were you born in that? Were you converted? Tell us a little bit about your experience with the religion.
Okay, so I was born in it. My mom tells me that I was sitting on her back when they joined. And so, yes. So probably I was maybe 6 months, 8 months thereabouts when they joined. And so I have grown up, I was baptized in it. I grew up knowing, okay, so my affiliation is the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And I'm not a convert. I was born into the church. And so far it's been good. I grew up learning that we had a lot of standards we needed to abide by. We couldn't do everything other people elsewhere were doing. And my father was the strict type that would tell you, okay, so you are a young woman. You are not supposed to do this. You are not supposed to do that. And so I grew up knowing all of those things. I grew up knowing about modesty. I grew up knowing about chastity. I grew up knowing about all the good things we are supposed to know. And then in my house, we always had morning devotions. We always had family home evenings on Mondays where this is one thing. So my house was like the house for everybody. On Mondays, practically the whole ward comes to my house to have like family home evenings. Missionaries will be there, single adults will be there, families will be there, people who don't have other members of the families would come there. And so on Monday evenings, my house is always full and alive with people. And so almost every missionary that served in Accra and served in my ward, then it was Newtown ward, would not go back knowing the Kujo family or the Kujo family, because everybody wanted to just come and serve in Newtown ward because they know if they come, they'll be welcomed. So my house was like the second house for missionaries, the second house for everybody in the world. And so that was how growing up in the church was like for me. It was always one activity or the other, attending seminary. So seminary is like an early morning scripture study class where we have to study the scriptures. So it can be the Bible, either the New Testament or the Old Testament, the Book of Mormon, the Pearl of Great Price, you know. So, and it was compulsory, whether I liked it or not, I had to go for seminary in the morning before going to school. And so it was like a routine. It was a routine. And then after I outgrew seminary growing age, I had to go to institute. For institutes, I was my own person. And so I could decide when to go or when not to go. But then I was always embedded in it. I was always happy because I was going to meet friends. You know, and then we get to chat, we get to learn, and we get to mingle among ourselves. And so it was very interesting for me in the church growing up, knowing that at least every Monday morning I get to see friends, we share the gospel, we sing. And then the most interesting aspect of it all is there's always refreshment at the end of there's always refreshment. And so even if Monday evenings are like special days of the week because we get to meet friends, we get to chat after Sunday, and then we have ice cream or we have popcorn. Sometimes we get to watch movies and then we discuss the movies, what we learned from the movies, the bad things we should take out, we shouldn't follow, and all that. And so that is how my religious affiliation has been. I grew up knowing that there was someone called God, there was someone called Jesus Christ, or there is someone called Jesus Christ who would always be there for us. There's a God who listens to our prayers and who answers them. So far as we do what is right, he would always be there to protect us. And so this is what I've grown up knowing. And so far, it hasn't been an easy ride. Sometimes I ask myself, if there is really God, why do certain things happen to us? Why do certain things happen to me? And I still baffle with it sometimes. But one thing I take is that there are times or years that everything seems to be going so well and I'm so happy. And so I tell myself that now that I am happy, I am not complaining. I am happy. Everything is going on well. I'm getting all the things I ask God for. And so this is his assurance that he's there. He's giving me the foundation, and so that when the times of the trials come, I'll know that it is just a passing thing. It would pass and go. And so that is something I hold on dear to, that he's always there. He's always watching us. He's always watching over us. And no matter what we do, he's going to be the same. Nothing about him has changed. He's going to be the same merciful Father, and he would always forgive us of our misfortunes, of our things we are not supposed to do. He would always forgive us and then bring us the right path. And so this is what I know.
What a beautiful testimony you've just borne to your family. And my heart is full to hear. Thank you for sharing that. And I think that, you know, I believe the same, and I appreciate that. Let's see. So we've talked about religion. We've talked about education. Why don't you just tell us? Okay, so university. Keep going in your life. Let's hear some more. What else would you like to share?
So, like I was saying, I struggled a little bit with my education. It took me time for me to find a firm ground, for me to know that I can do it. And so, although I went to the university, I enjoyed the university life. I liked being on my own, being my own person. But it was a lot challenging because just around that time, my dad lost his job. And so it was just my mom. And my mom wasn't really making enough to take care of all of us and then our needs. And so it was a little challenging. And so I tried to do all sorts of things. So here, our system is that in the first year, if you are lucky, you get a state, should I say, hostel or hall to stay in, which is a little subsidized. Then in your subsequent years, you move out to give way to other fresh students coming to stay on campus. So in my second year, I had to go out. My third year, I had to go out until my final year. But because I knew if I move out of campus, it was going to be tough because the hostel outside campus are expensive. So I was always engaging myself in extracurricular activities on campus, like the cadet I mentioned, like sports. So you see me everywhere. Anything that had to do with sports, I'll be there. One sport I loved in the university was badminton. And so I am one of my university champions in badminton. Wow. So we have a university games across the country. All universities in Ghana have a common, how do I say, we call it GUSA games, Ghana University Students Association games. So all universities in the country come together and then they compete. And then we look for the first, we look for the second, we look for the third. And so I was on my school's team, my University of Cape Coast. That was the university I attended. I was on my school team, the badminton team. And in my first year, I didn't really know how to play it. So I was just watching. But I gained interest in it from my second year onwards. And so my third year, I was privileged to be part of the team. And then I made my school proud. I won silver. I won silver for my school. Yes. So I won silver for my school in the second year, although I competed, I was still trying to learn the, you know, basics of the game. So I didn't get anywhere. But my third year, I won silver. And then my fourth year, I had to go for my year abroad. So here, when you are doing French in your final year, you get to spend it in any French country of your choice for a year.
Oh,
Yes.
wow.
So I got the opportunity to be sponsored by the country. So Ghana sponsored me and then took me to Togo for my year abroad. So I stayed there for a whole year. And then my expenses, my books, my textbooks, my stuff were all paid for just for me to have hands-on experience with the language, to be embedded amongst the people. Yes. And so when I got there, there were other students from other countries. So there were Nigerians there, and then there were Ghanaians there. The Ghanaians there were also from other universities in Ghana, but not from the University of Cape Coast. So it was a rich opportunity for me to, you know, get the language, because learning it is different from being able to speak. Yes, but once you are among the people who speak, you get to practice it day in and day out. You eat the language, you dress the language, you know. So it was a good opportunity for me and my other friends that had opportunity to be sponsored by the country to go there. And then we came back after a year to come and defend our thesis and then graduate.
So I have a question. So when you went to Togo, were all of your you did you attend classes, I assume? And
Yes,
were they
so we have,
in French?
yes, they were purely in French.
That's hard.
Yes,
Was it difficult at
they were
first?
purely. Well, it was difficult and challenging in the beginning, but after a month, we started getting used to it. So in Ghana, although we're studying French, our lecturers will come, they will speak French. You know, it's like the French and the English. When you don't understand something, you can ask in English, it will be explained in English and all that.
No.
But when we got there, it was basically French. It was purely French. Everything was in French.
Well.
And so it's either you understand it or you understand it. You didn't have a choice. You didn't have a choice. And mingling with the community people was also helpful. We go to the markets. We had to, you know, speak the language because those in the market do not understand English. And we didn't understand their local dialect as well. So we were forced to, you know, yes, we were forced to speak. And then it helped a lot of us. By the time we came back, we were rattling the French like it wasn't anybody's business, you
That's
know.
wonderful.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. I wish I had that opportunity. I also took French in the university, but I didn't learn it very well, but I've taken classes after with like a private tutor, and but I don't speak as well as I'm sure you do. Have you been able to use it in your life past university?
Yes. So immediately after university, I had to do national service. So here, after your university, you have 1 year mandatory service to the nation. Yes. Yes. So I had the opportunity to serve at it was an assembly, a municipal assembly. I didn't use the French there. But immediately after service, I taught in a school. I started teaching in a school. So I started teaching French in a school. So
Nice.
I taught for like 6 months, and then I decided to look for other opportunities. And so I applied to one of our governmental agencies, our Ministry of Education, and then I got the opportunity to go and teach French again. And so I taught French for about 4 years, from 2010 to 2016. Yes, so about 4 years. No,
6 years.
6 years. Yeah, 6 years. So from 2010 to, no, it was 4 years. So from 2010, I did my national service to 2012.
Okay.
Then I started teaching from 2012 to 2016.
So, what did you do in the National Service?
So I was, so our national service, you can be sent anywhere to work. You can be sent to an office, any of the ministries. It can be sent to the classroom. It can be sent to any office at all. Mm. Anywhere there is a vacancy for people, you go there and then you just go and do anything. It wasn't specific to what you learned at school.
So it's not military.
It's not military.
Serving the country.
Yes, it's just serving the country. It's not military at all.
And is this a paid thing or this is again voluntary?
It's volunteer, but you get remuneration every month. And so whilst I was there, we were being remunerated, I think, 200 cedis a month.
Which so did that support okay. you or did you have to work too?
Well, I was always sitting in an office. It was a municipal assembly office. So in the morning, I'll just dress up and go to the office, sit there. And then I was supposed to supervise people. Like there were people who go to the market to collect tools, like from market people. So I was supposed to supervise them. So that was what I was supposed to do mainly. But most of the time, I wasn't really doing anything because things weren't going on as they were supposed to. So I just go sit at the end of the day, go back home. It was sort of boring. But what made it interesting was that we have an association. So it's like a club of all service personnel in the region. I was in the central region and there are elections to choose like heads that would lead for that particular year. So there is a president, there is a secretary, there's a treasurer, there's an organizer. And so elections are held like every year to re-elect new leaders for that particular year. And so I was nominated as the secretary for the Central Region Association. And so, yes, I had to go and read a manifesto I wasn't prepared for because I was quiet. Should I say quiet? I wasn't quiet, but I was reserved. I was reserved because it was a new environment. I didn't know anybody. I didn't have friends. So I was reserved. But I was nominated by my national service director. And then I was selected. And so I had to go and read a manifesto to the people of what I would be able to do if I was elected into that position and all. And so that was where the interesting part started coming out. We had to go for elections. I had to do some campaigning and try to pull votes and all that. And so at the end of the day, I was elected as the municipal secretary and then the regional secretary as well for the region. Yes. And so we had the opportunity to travel across the regions. Wherever there's a program, we'll be assigned to go and then oversee the program, participate. There were leadership forums that were asked to go and then attend. And so that was the highlight of my national service. And I got to learn a lot of things. There were capacity trainings for us and things we needed to do just before we left service, things that we needed to do to enable us gain employment immediately after service and not just sit at home and all that. So it was useful. It was useful. So I was just assigned to an office. I'll just do administrative and clerical duties. I had a computer, but I never really used it. And that was it.
I wonder if that experience helped you with maybe the job you have today. Do you think it helped you to get this job?
To an extent, it did. But I think what really helped me get this job was my French.
Okay.
Yes. And so after I taught for about 4 years in the government sector, in our Ministry of Education, I got the opportunity to teach the area presidency where I am now. The area presidency then they had a little bit of knowledge of French, but they wanted to improve upon it. And so I had the opportunity to teach the area presidency and then some few people in the area. And so they introduced me to working in the church workforce. And so they realized that I had some capabilities that, and I was able to do certain things. And so when opportunities opened, they alerted me and then asked me to apply. I applied, and then I was called for an interview, and then I attended the interview, and I got a job. And so I got a job as an administrative assistant to the real estate, area real estate manager. And so there I did administrative tasks. But when I was teaching in the school, in the Ghana Education Service, my headmistress, the principal of the school, took me like her daughter and was always giving me the clerical stuff to do. You know, there are people who were, she's the kind that was not technologically inclined. And so at a point in time when she had things to type, when she had payroll to process and all that, I was the one doing it for her. And so I gained administrative skills trying to like do that for her. And so that was something that helped me get to this job also, because I had the experience, although it wasn't much, but I had hands-on experience with administrative skills. And so I served as the area, the administrative assistant, the area real estate manager for 4 years. So I started in 2016. And then early part of 2020, I was assigned to, there's a new department that was opened, a center of excellence. I was assigned to the center of excellence. And then I decided that I needed to move up the ladder. There were more things I could do. So after school, I decided to do a postgraduate diploma in business administration. And then I majored in human resource management. And so an opportunity came. The organization in the Africa West area was reorganized. And then there was an open slot for an HR role. And so I applied. And then I went through a series of interviews. And then at the end of the day, I got it. And so although I started as an administrative assistant, I am now an HR generalist in the area.
Wonderful. And does it keep you very busy?
Very busy.
Yeah.
Very, very busy. Well, as compared to being an administrative assistant and being in the COE, I think it's a little relaxing here. Oh. It is also busy in its own way, but there's not much pressure. As with the COE or as the administrative assistant.
Thank goodness.
But it is still busy. Yeah. It's still busy. But it's okay. It's okay. I'm enjoying it here. I'm learning a lot of things. There are a lot of things I need to learn, because although I had a qualification in human resource management, I haven't really used it. Mm-hmm. And so it is sort of stale. The things I know are stale. There are new advancements, there are new things I need to learn, and I need to gain that experience. And so I am learning. I'm learning.
It seems like you have had a pattern of learning in your life. You've talked a lot about different things that you've learned, and you've talked about the different stages of learning, and you know, you've gone back for that new certificate, you've done this, you've gone to Togo and really sought to learn the language, been kind of put into it, really. But it seems like a pattern in your life, that of education, to better yourself. That seems to be coming out. Would you say that's a fair assessment?
Yes, that's a very fair assessment. My parents were the kind that valued education. And so although my mom is not too educated, she wishes for all of us to have what she didn't. Mm-hmm. Yes. And so she would do everything in her power to make sure that we get to where she wasn't able to get. For my dad, it's a no-go. You don't have a choice. You have to learn. You have to learn. You have to learn. It is learn and learn and learn and learn. And he was very concerned with our educational aspects. And so even till now, he tells me, the fact that you've gotten this HRO doesn't mean that is the end of your life. You still have to learn.
And does that make you overwhelmed, or do you appreciate it? How do you feel about his attitude?
So growing up, when I didn't understand what it meant to learn, I was overwhelmed. I was like, it was worrying me. I was like, it's a bit too much. But now, no, I know that it is very necessary. And so even if you've not pushed me, he hasn't told me to continue. I know myself, deep within myself, that I need to improve. I need to always improve on what I have because that is going to be a stepping stone for me in the near future.
Well,
So
this
if
seems
I
like.
didn't have,
Go ahead.
so if I didn't have this postgraduate certificate, I don't think I would have gotten this job I am currently in. And even as I am here, I know there are certifications that I need to do that would make me a certified or a chartered human resource personnel. And I have started. And so it is difficult learning with children, trying to take care of children, but I know that it is necessary. It's a necessary evil. I need to overcome that. I need to do that. And so there is no procrastination to that. It's either you do it now or you do it in the future. It doesn't really, you still have to do it. It's never going to be easier than it is now. So it's either you do it now or you let it go.
Wonderful. Well,
So my
it seems like maybe a nice, it kind of makes me think about your children, and I'm wondering how you approach them with these same types of, well, we could start about where you, how you got them. Tell us about your family life, and but I'd like to hear a little bit at some point about your approach to your children, and has that that's been instilled with you, is that, are you setting that down for the next generation?
Yes. So although I know that my parents have been on me for learning, I feel that probably if they had made me understand the reason why I needed to learn, it would have been more easier on me. And so I have learned a lot of things from how they brought us up. And I've realized that, okay, so I need to make my children understand that this is the reason why they need to learn. It is not, you don't make it compulsory, whether you like it or not, you learn. But they need to understand why they need to learn, the advantages they are going to get when they learn. It's not like a dictatorship, something that whether you like it or not, you have to learn. You sit down and you write. You write your ABCDs, you learn your ABCDs, otherwise you aren't eating, you aren't sleeping. No. But to make them understand in a loving way why they need to learn, you're understanding with them. And they would pick it up themselves. And so after school, so I'm going to go back to before I got them, before I got became a family. So after school, I knew that at one point in time I would get married and then have a family of my own. But it hasn't been too smooth with me with relationships. I start one, I end, I start one, it doesn't go well. And then I met a nice gentleman in my ward. He had relocated from a different area, then had joined like my ward newly. I didn't like him from the beginning, but he proved to be a nice friend. So we became friends, we became like brothers. We were always everywhere together. And I had someone I was going to get married to. But at the end of the day, it didn't work out. He also had someone he was going to get married to. It didn't work out. And so it was like, okay, we are good friends. We are like siblings. We basically know ourselves. So why don't we give it a try and see where it would go? My parents weren't too overjoyed with that when they got to know that we were planning to get married. But, my mom at that time was still, for me, I believe that she was still treating me like a kid, like a child. She sits me down to make me understand why she was against my decision to get married to that young man I called a friend, but she just said she wasn't going to agree to it. And I was like, okay, I think I am old enough to make my own choices now. And so that is what I want. Instead of going to start a new relationship afresh and then risking it not going well at the end of the day after wasting maybe 2 years, 3 years, and then it doesn't work, and then I'd have to start over again. It's better to take the chances with someone I think I know and it's a friend than to go to someone I don't totally know. And so we had our conversations here and there, and then she finally agreed and accepted for us to get married. And so we had our traditional marriage sometime in May 2016.
Let me ask a question. Sure. I'm sorry. Let me ask a question. So were you waiting for her to approve of your marriage before you went ahead, or do you think you would have gone ahead without her approval?
I wouldn't have gone ahead without her approval.
Okay.
Yes, I wouldn't have gone ahead without her approval because she was going to be a main part of the ceremony. Yes. And so I needed her approval.
Gotcha.
Yes, I needed her approval. I was a little, you know, headstrong, but I needed to make her understand that that was my choice.
Mm-hmm.
And so she agreed to it. And then she started the, you know, she's an event planner. She's an event manager. She does decor. She cooks. She bakes. And so basically everything was going to be like on her shoulders. And so she started planning. And then in May, I think 5th May 2016, we did our traditional marriage. And so here we have sort of like, should I say three or two? We have two main, you know, ceremonies we do. The traditional one, mm-hmm. where the family will come together and then certain items will be presented to the girl and then the family.
Mm.
Yes, so we had that ceremony. Then after that, we had the white, the church wedding the following Sunday. So it was a Thursday. The Thursday was the traditional marriage ceremony. And then the Saturday was the church wedding where we went to church and then we had everything, sermon, you know, everything where we exchanged vows and then we signed the certificates and all. And then the Sunday we went to church, and then the following Tuesday we went to the temple to see.
Oh.
Yes. So we sealed our marriage on, I think, so it was 5th, it was 7th, and then it was, I think, 10th. So within that time frame, I got married in, on May 7th, 2016.
Okay.
Yes.
And which temple were you sealed in?
In the Ghana Accra Temple.
Okay.
Yes, I was sealed in the Ghana Accra Temple. And Elder Terence Michael Vincent, he sealed us.
Oh.
Yes, he sealed us. And he was some sort of a father. He wasn't a sort of a father, but he was a father to us.
Uh-huh.
He was a mentor. I am what I am now, partly because of him. I am where I am now, partly because of him. He saw something in me, and he knew where it was going to go. And so he gave me the chance. He gave me the opportunity. And it has blessed my life, and it has blessed the life of my family. And so I am so very grateful to him.
I can just feel that.
Yeah. And then I think a year down the line, the first baby decided to come. So
the what?
He was born.
Oh,
the first baby.
First baby.
So
yes.
I gave birth to my first son on the 9th of February, 2017.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And then we decided to name him after Elder Vincent. He was then the area president. Yes. Area president of the Accra West area. So Africa West area. So my first son is called Terence Michael Vincent.
Wow.
Yes. And then about 2 years down the line, the second baby decided to come. And so the second baby is called Aria. My husband decided to name him after me. I don't know why, but so we named her Aria Mahana Vincent Akolache.
Oh,
yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And so far that has been it. Marriage life. Would you want me to talk about marriage life?
It's hard.
Marriage life is hard. Today, I say that if I had known marriage was going to be this difficult, I don't think I would have gotten married.
Well, I think
Well,
a lot of people would probably agree with you. It's not easy.
it's not easy at all. But I am very grateful to my mother. She's been there for me. And so after 3 months, I needed to come back to work, and she's been there. She's been the one taking care of the babies.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And so we are a close-knit family. But I think I am failing in one aspect of my life, which is my marriage life. It hasn't been too smooth. And as we currently speak, my husband is not, we are sort of separated. We are not separated as in separated, but my husband lives somewhere else, and I also live somewhere else. And so I don't live with my husband. It's been about 2 years since he moved out of where we currently are. But we still talk, we still talk from time to time. We hope that someday our differences will be settled and then we get to moving back together. But we are taking it one day at a time.
I hope for that too, for you,
Yeah.
Milana. Yeah, that's not easy.
Yeah.
That's part of your history, and I'm glad that you felt comfortable sharing that.
Well.
I also think that it's beautiful that you shared your hopes and dreams for the future, and that's important for your family to know.
Yeah.
So.
I really look forward to see my children grow up one day to become responsible adults. Yes. And I think my boy is doing a good job. He's so protective of his sister. Anytime a visitor comes around and decides to take her, it's like, no, put my sister down. Mommy, come for her. Mommy, come for Aria. Don't take my sister away.
Oh.
And it's been consistent. It's been like that for even if his grandmother is going to town and she puts his sister in the car. She's like, no, mommy, go for Aria. Aria will not go with grandma. Aria will stay with us. And so, although he's still young, at 3 years, he's young. He's learned a vital part of being his sister's keeper and trying to, take care of his sister. So I hope he goes with that and then learns a lot of responsible things to be a responsible adult one day. That is all I hope for him. And I hope that he becomes a good boy. He's able to raise a family of his own, take very good care of his family. And that's all I pray for them. I pray that they get more out of life than what I'm getting currently.
So I have a son. I have two sons that remind me of what your son is, what you're talking about with your son. And I feel like those characteristics are, they come with them and they follow them. You know,
Yeah.
that's kind of how that's who they are. I bet, I have no idea, but I would bet that little boy will carry that characteristic as he grows. It is fun to watch your children connect together and as they grow, and they'll have each other always, which is
Yeah.
beautiful too.
Yeah.
So I'm curious what you see. You've talked a little bit about your future, and you've talked about more schooling and maybe new roles in your work as you age, and coming together one day, maybe back with your husband, and looking for your children to grow. Are there any other facets in your life that you would like to see happen as you look forward in your life? I mean, that's a pretty full life. I'm not saying that you should have any other aspirations, but I'm just to make a whole picture of you. Are there any other things you're thinking about as you reflect on your life going forward?
So I think that one thing I need, one thing there is room for improvement in my life is probably my spiritual aspect. And so although I have this relationship with the Heavenly Father, I feel I am not there yet. I feel there's still more I need to do than I am doing now. I feel that I need to read more. I need to maybe talk more with our Heavenly Father. I feel also that probably all that I'm doing is just about what I think I need to do, but I'm not focusing on what our Heavenly Father wants for me.
Oh.
And so maybe that is one aspect I'm supposed to focus on, to really get what our Heavenly Father wants.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel sometimes that I'm not living to my full potential. And probably that is the reason why I haven't gotten to that potential yet. So I need to sit up and then do more than I am doing now to be able to get to that full potential.
Well, I think that's a very common, a lot of, especially us as women, sort of feel those feelings. You know, we somehow feel that we're not all that that our Heavenly Father wants us to be. And yet I have to say, just as a friend, which I call you a friend now, I feel like we know each other. At least I know you. But, I just hope that you'll be kind to yourself, you know, and I think we do sort of, we can feel in our heart when we're distanced from our Heavenly Father, and we don't want to be that, you know. But when it comes to, you know, doing more or, you know, adding more to our life, I feel like sometimes we can overwhelm ourselves, you know, and it makes it difficult to find joy in our life if we are trying to put more on our shoulders than maybe our Heavenly Father really wants us to, you know. So, as a friend, I'll just say, don't be too hard on yourself, Lana.
Yeah, it's true. Sometimes it's overwhelming when I think about all the things I feel I'm not doing right, or all the things I feel I need to improve upon. It's overwhelming. But I feel that if I'm able to do all that, then I'll be able to help my children also become, you know, what they are supposed to be. Definitely, if I don't know something, there's no way I can instill that in my children. Yes. And so I need to be able to do that and then be able to teach my children, for them to also have that conviction. And so I wish that one day my children would grow up not being like me, but being very spiritual, honoring all their callings, you know, in church, attending church the way they are supposed to, doing all that they can to, you know, help the less privileged. I feel there are a lot of things I'm not doing that I can do at my capacity. There are a lot of things I can do that I'm not doing at this point that I feel my children can do better, but I need to help them to be able to do that. And the only way I can help them is if I'm able to become more than I am now.
Well, I wish you the very best in that. You have a very admirable desire to bless the lives of your children, and so your eyes, I'm sorry, it looks like you're having an allergy attack or something, are you?
Yeah, it looks like
something. I know, it does. At first of all, you're tearing up, but I think it's itchiness.
Yeah, it's itching. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Oh, you're fine. Is there anything for, I mean, I feel like we've covered a lot of, in just a short time. It's been wonderful, and you've been so great to share so openly. And I wonder, is there anything else you'd like to put here on this history at this point that we've not covered?
Okay, so I think growing up, a lot of people have contributed apart from my mom and my dad. You know, my grandparents were also around a lot of the while. I had to spend some time with my grandmother before she passed. And when things were tough for the family, all these external family members were there to lend a helping hand.
Mm-hmm.
So my mother's mother, I think she was called Elizabeth Fofoeje. She was born in, I think, 1921 or so. 1921. And
what is her name?
Elizabeth Fofoeje.
Okay.
That is how she was called. And she was there for my mom. Anytime my mom had issues, she would just take us to her and they would welcome us. So my grandmother and my aunties would always welcome us with open arms. And then we'll stay there for a while until things calm down and then we come back. And so I grew up knowing my grandmother, that is my mother's mother, and then my father's father. My father's father was called Erasmus Annan Okante.
Mm-hmm.
And for him, although we were always visiting, he was frail even at that young age. And so we didn't grow up knowing him because he passed on when we were still small, when I was about, I think, 8 years. That was when he passed. But he was still, he's who has made my mom who she is.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And so they've been strongholds for the family. And I think my mother is trying to replicate that because she got the help she needed from her parents. And so she's also trying to help me, her children, to also, be able to work and take care of our children. She gives us the free rein. She takes care of, she babysits for us anytime she's available so that we can go about our normal working hours. As we talk now, my sister is in China. She's doing her master's. Yes. Yes, she had a scholarship. She worked with the Ministry of Health.
Hmm.
And so she's a psychiatric tutor in the one of the country's nursing training institutions.
Hmm.
And so she had a scholarship to go and do her master's in China. So she is currently there.
Hmm.
Yes. And so her children are with my mom currently and us. So her children are with us. Yes, and then we are taking care of them until she comes back in 2 years, and then she comes back for her children. Yes, and so if my mom hadn't been there, who would have, been able to do that? Especially in this COVID times when schools are not in session and the children are always at home. And so if she wasn't there and I needed to go to work, who would take care of my children because they can't go to school? They are always at home,
wow.
And so she's been a big blessing to the family. And I pray that she's always strong and we are always able to offer help when the time comes for us to help her. So I think that's just about it. So for my father's mother, she's still alive though. She's getting to her 90 years. She's still alive, yes. But we don't get to associate too much with her. We go there once in a while. She celebrates her birthday every year in January. And so during those times, you get to meet her. But I didn't get to meet my father's father. When we were born, he had already passed on. And so we didn't get to meet him. But these three people, my father's mother, my mother's mother, and then my mother's father have been there. And so we are grateful for each and every one of them for all the help they are giving us.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a real legacy of cooperation and helping the next generation to get a leg up.
Yeah.
Are they all from that same town that you have been, where you were growing? Like, where are they from? What's their genealogy?
Okay, so my mother's mother is from a place called Osu. That is where we grew up to see them living. But I understand they were in Takwa. They grew up in Takwa. And so they moved, they migrated from Takwa, a place. It's also, it's not in Accra. It's, I think, in the Western region somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so they migrated from Takwa after he got married to my grandfather. And then they came to live in Osu after a while. So that is where they continue to live until they all passed on.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Do you think that it's been Ghana for years, generations and generations?
Come again?
Do you think that your families have, your mother and father's families have been from Ghana for generations back?
Yes, I think my mother's mother and father have been from Ghana, but I think that my father might have come from Togo. That is what I think.
Okay.
Because, yes, because we have some aunties and uncles that are there, that still live there.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And so sometimes we go there to visit during festive occasions like Easter.
Mm-hmm.
So during Easter, sometimes we all move to the village in Togo. And then we spend some time there. Sometimes we spend a week, sometimes more. And then after the Easter celebrations, we come back down. And so I think that they might have migrated from Togo.
Interesting. That would be interesting to know.
Yes. I think that they might have migrated from Togo. But when you ask him where he comes from, he'll tell you he's from Djoudj in the Volta region. So the Volta region shares a border with Togo.
Mm-hmm.
The town Djoudj actually shares, it's a walking distance from Djoudj to Togo. You can easily walk in and out. And so I think that over the years, probably they are from there, but some way, somehow, they came to live in Ghana and then they got stuck and they now say they are from Ghana. But I think that they are not Ghanaians. I feel they are Togolese.
Interesting.
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, anything else you'd like to share?
Did I give you my sister's name?
I think you did. And we're going to have to, I'm going to transcribe this and I'm going to have to give it to you for you to correct some of these places and names, because I know I'm not going to do justice to them. I will totally butcher them.
All right, no problem.
Okay.
That's no problem at all.
All right. Well, this has been absolutely a treat for me. I hope you've enjoyed it.
I have every moment of it.
Great. Yeah. This
is Thank you for the opportunity.
You are so
reminiscence and then go back on my childhood days. I don't get that opportunity to think back, you know, and so it has given me something to look back to, you know.
Thank you so much. You have a lot of positive things to look back to, but I like how you said, you know, life is not all easy. And I love how you said that I use the good, and then when it gets bad, I know that things will pass. And what a great perspective. So that's a really great legacy, Mahana, for your children. So I appreciate your time so much, and I will get this transcribed and send it to you. There is one place that we could put this, actually, if you're interested in placing this oral history in my school, they're not doing it. It's not a religious, it's a depository for oral histories. So if you're interested in depositing that, I would have one consent form for you to sign. All right, do you care about that? Are you interested or?
I'm interested. I think that'll be fun.
Okay.
So what happens when you deposit? What happens?
What happens is I just will put it there, and then they have what's called special collections. And so if, say, your children, you know, wanted to see it, or a family member or anyone actually was interested in what was the life of a, you know, a woman of this time period, what was her life like, they could listen to, watch your video or read your transcription to just kind of understand what life was like for you.
I think that would be interesting.
Yeah. I do too. I really do. And it's they like to collect people, just, you know, us ordinary folk, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They like to collect those types of things. Not to say either of us ordinary, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So and it's, all right, then I will email you that one, that consent form, and you, as soon as you sign it, then just email it back to me, and then I'll have it with me, so that, like, when I give it to them, they'll have that.
So. Okay, so I'll send you the pictures as well. I haven't forgotten about
it. Yes, I want the pictures. Definitely add it. Yeah.
Okay, so I'll see if I can get some of my grandparents
Yes.
so that's I'll see what I can do.
Any pictures you want to add. There's not a limit.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
I mean,
All
maybe
right.
1,000's a limit, but no.
All
Yeah, be generous, because that'll be
right.
fun. So,
Okay.
all right. And I do have the information from your friend, so I'll be talking to her. So thank you again for that. And I hope you
You're
have a
welcome.
wonderful, wonderful evening, and I'll be in
Thank
touch with
you.
you. So,
Sure.
okay. Thank you,
All
Lahana.
right, it's been fun talking to you. All right, enjoy the rest of your day too.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, bye.